But,
okay, I take your point that a kind word doesn't cost anything. Patrice, thanks a million. That's Patrice O'Sullivan, 51551. Let me bring in Johan Verbruggen. Johan, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are things?
Good. Your story, obviously it's your mother's story as well, but you can proceed, and then I think we're going to talk to mother as well. Go ahead, Johan.
So I suppose I'm lucky in the sense that because of my birth, it was a traumatic birth. I'm lucky in that the disability that I have is limited to my arm. Whereas if you were to look at the records of my birth, you would think that I would end up with severe cerebral palsy. And in fact, that's what mum and dad were told at the time because of a lack of oxygen. And mum would be able to tell you more about the birth itself, but what it's left me with is an arm, a hand function that's limited to the thumb and index finger. I don't have power beyond that. And then my arm function is very limited as well. It's also 4 inches shorter than my other arm.
Okay.
That impacted my life. And
and is there a name on this, Johan?
Well, it's commonly known as Erb's palsy. It's essentially damage done to the kind of bundle of nerves between the shoulder and the neck due to excess kind of pulling while the baby is stuck behind the symphysis pubis.
Yeah.
And I like that. I'm lucky that because of the lack of oxygen and the fact that I had to be resuscitated, I'm lucky that it's not far worse.
You stay there, please. I think we're going to talk to your mother as well this break. 51551 Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. We just heard from Johan Verbruggen about what happened to him during childbirth. And the condition is called Erb's palsy. Mary is Johan's mother. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened?
Well, it happened nearly 30 years ago,
And it's great to hear him on the other line as well.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the picture the night that he was born, I can tell you. Mm. My problem was, Joe, that a lot of this I felt could have been predicted because I was a type 1 diabetic. Right. I was attending privately. I had a previous child born in 87 and he was 8 pounds 3 ounces, but he had suffered what's called a shoulder dystocia. And dystocia means difficult birth and shoulder means it's caused by the shoulder getting caught.
Okay.
So that was in 87, and in 89 I was pregnant again. And there was a letter written by my endocrinologist to my obstetrician stating that we have to accept that this is a macrosomic baby. And that means that you've got a big baby in there.
Okay.
And Johan was born and he was 10 pounds, over 10 pounds, I think he's about 10 and a half pounds. And he was 3 weeks premature.
Okay.
So I was brought into my obstetrician's rooms and on December the 28th. And I kept saying to him, I think this baby is, it's like an alien. I said, it's down on my bladder, it's up in my chest. And his reaction was, oh, all you expectant women and your vanity.
Good gosh.
And I just felt, you know, this isn't vanity, this is my second child. Mm. I know that this is very, very different to my first child. And I kind of tried to open up the conversation of maybe a cesarean section because I'd heard about diabetics having to have cesarean sections before, but he wouldn't entertain it at all. So the night of the delivery, anyway, I went in and I had been induced early on the 29th, I think around 7 o'clock in the morning. They brought me down and they induced me. And but it was about 9 o'clock that night. And the midwives there and the registrar, I have to say, they were absolutely lovely. But they kept saying to me, this baby is very big for its gestational age.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were unhappy with it and they kept saying it. And the second stage of my labour was very, very slow. It wasn't progressive. Like most labours, Joe, they accelerate to their end.
Okay.
So you start off and you have a few pains and they take a long time and then it gathers and it gathers and it gathers and it gathers to its natural end. But my second stage was what's called a decelerated stage. It was going backwards. It wasn't going forward. And that's because Johan was stuck. And, you know, they're telling you to push and push and push, but you're trying to push something up almost against a concrete wall. It just won't happen. And
Did you ask for a C-section, or anyone suggest a section, or given the difficulty?
Yeah, my husband was in the delivery room with me, Joe, and like, he's not the same, but he's a vet. And he kept saying, like, should there not be a cesarean section done here? But the obstetrician came in, it was the 29th of December. He was in his monkey suit with his dicky bow, and he overruled everybody, and he said, no, we'll go ahead. And his registrar, he said to the registrar, now, you go ahead. I'm here. I'm watching, and everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. And both my husband and I remember very well, she crossed her arms across her chest, and she said, I'm not delivering this baby. Now, he was her boss, and she said, I'm not delivering this baby. I don't like the presentation of it, and I think we have a macrosomic baby here. Mm-hmm. And he said, not at all, not at all, and he took off his jacket, and he proceeded.
Sorry, who was I mixed up now. Who was the boss?
Well, the obstetrician.
And that was a male? That was the man in the monkey suit, as you call it? Yeah. They're going out somewhere that night. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And he overruled
his registrar.
He overruled the registrar.
Who was a woman.
He overruled what the midwives were been saying most of the night. And they were with me.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And so anyway, Johan was born, and he, first of all, he had to be resuscitated. There was a huge panic in the room. A paediatrician was called down. The obstetrician himself was kind of mopping his brow with his handkerchief, and they had to resuscitate Johan. His APGAR score was actually nil at 10 minutes, which loads of people can't believe ever since. Like, the outlook was very, very dim, and Johan was completely blue. And they eventually wrapped him in a blanket, and they said, they brought over, I just saw his forehead, and they said, kiss baby before we take him. And they kissed him, and they took him off. And there was just this silence in the room, and I just heard my husband had been on the left-hand side of the bed. And when the labor was over, he was actually behind me in the bed. And he had been screaming into my ear, Mary, push, push for all your might, push as hard as you can. But the bed actually ended up halfway across the room from the pulling that had been carried out.
Oh, God. And did you realise that how soon afterwards did you realise that there was a problem with Johan's arm?
We didn't realise until the following day, and nobody ever gave us the name Erb's palsy. It was, we left the hospital with a child with a gammy arm. And nobody would discuss it with me because the paediatrician went off on his holidays that night. He was finished and he didn't come back for a week. And when he came back, he said to me, I said, look, what's the story here? Like, my baby is fitting and nobody will discuss it with me, only you. And he said, I'll put it to you this way. When you're when your child is 25 and he qualifies as an engineer, then you know he's good enough to be an engineer.
I don't understand that.
You know, it was kind of like, we have to wait and see and take it as it goes.
It's almost like get over it.
Yeah. And
when, of
course,
when
then
did
the blame game started. First of all, the obstetrician said, he came to me and he said, I want to talk to your husband. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, what's this about? And I said, well, my husband is very busy. He's a vet. And I can't say when he'll be in.
Talk to me.
Sorry?
I presume he said, talk to me.
Oh, no, he didn't want to talk to me at all. He wanted to talk to my husband because he was aware my husband was a vet. And I said to him, I couldn't say exactly when my husband will be there. Okay. And he said, well, I don't care when your husband comes in, but he said to one of the nurses, give my my phone number to the reception here. And he said, the minute Mr. Verbruggen comes in, he said, I'm to be called in no matter what time of the day or night it is. So my husband didn't arrive in that night until about half 11, and I said it to the nurse. I said, I don't know, does he really mean it or not? But he said that he was to be wrong when my husband came in. And so he was wrong, and he did come in, and he sat on my bed, Joe, with his back turned to me, addressing my husband at the end of the bed. And he explained that it was a very difficult birth, that Johan had been very, very big, but that I hadn't really pushed hard enough due to the diabetes, and that I had got extremely tired, and that I wasn't able to help them at all with the delivery.
It was your fault.
It was my fault. And funnily enough, Joe, when we spoke to the paediatrician, he said that I had pushed too hard and that I hadn't been able to do the panting properly, and that that was why Johan had been damaged, that I had pushed too hard. And that Johan was the only child
stuff,
in the country that had... They didn't know any other child that had suffered from this.
From Erb's palsy, as Johan
called it. They didn't give me the name.
Yeah,
they,
of course,
it was just that they'd never had come across such a delivery, and they had never come across such an
And did you take it any further, Mary? You said they were blaming you.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Yeah. And it wasn't until a few months later that I was actually sent to an occupational therapist, and she said to me, you know, I know of another child that has this condition.
Okay.
And I said, what condition? And she said, it's called Erb's palsy. And she said, the child is down in Cork.
Right.
And this was all news to me. So I actually wrote a letter into the Irish Times, the letters page. And within 24 hours, Joe, I had 42 families willing to come to a meeting.
All the same condition from...
All the same. Well, most of them, all they knew was that I described in the letter kind of basically what had happened with Johan, and that he was left with this arm that was basically dead. It was just swinging. That he had been very black and blue at the birth, and that he had a droopy eyelid, which was called a Horner syndrome. We weren't told that at the time, but a Horner syndrome. And they're left with this kind of droopy eyelid. And now that rectified itself over time. It's called, the injury is kind of from C5, C6, C7, C8 on the vertebrae. And then it goes off on T1. And this T1 caused the Horner syndrome. But we had to go and research it ourselves and learn as much as we possibly could.
Did you take it further, Mary? Did you get an apology? Did you get an explanation?
No, we never got an apology, but we knew everything wasn't making sense, Joe.
Yeah.
We were intelligent enough to know that the information, and you can hear the women there talking, you know that there's something wrong and that the information you're being given isn't the full information. And, you know, so we decided to research it ourselves, and that kind of showed us that there was something wrong here. So we eventually engaged a solicitor and we said, look, we have to get to the bottom of this. And at the time, Joe, it sounds kind of like, oh, you know, they were looking for money. We weren't looking for money. We wanted to make sure this didn't happen to anybody else.
Right.
I didn't want this to happen to anybody else. And I didn't want anybody else to receive the treatment that I had received. Now, I mean, I have to say the midwives and the registrar were brilliant. But the obstetrician and the cover-up afterwards of those around him, like the paediatricians and that, was just incredible.
And did you get anywhere in the with the solicitor and that route?
We did. We didn't get an apology, but it was we were advised to settle out of court. We settled out of court, and we were compensated.
Okay, well, but again, the usual what we hear is, was there a confidentiality clause and no admission of liability?
No admission of liability. No. But he paid handsomely at that time. Now, it's paltry compared to the use of your right arm.
Yeah,
but
of course.
At that time, it was considered a big win.
Yeah.
It had more than doubled, Joe, a previous case up in the north.
Okay. Johan, you had heard all this before, I hope.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I have, yeah. I'm going to nearly desensitize to the story because I've heard it so much.
I was going to say that in the middle, but I didn't want to in any way interrupt what your mother was saying because it was so serious.
Yeah.
So you And the Herbs policy in terms of your work, and what do you work at?
It's a good question. Mum and Dad's very positive experience of litigation and going to a solicitor and getting answers that the medical profession weren't willing to give to them at the time. Mm-hmm. I am a medical negligence solicitor. It's what I'm involved in. So I have, you know, patients that have herbs palsy. I have clients who have herbs palsy, and it's sad but not surprising to hear the stories of the women that were speaking to you earlier. It's something I hear on a daily basis in my line of work. It's this kind of lack of openness, then there's the insensitive and dishonest and sometimes downright deceptive responses to patients' queries about what has gone wrong that drive them to the likes of myself.
Okay.
And it's 30 years on from my birth, and it hasn't gotten any better, really.
And, you know, we're hearing 2 months ago, 4 weeks ago. Anyway, but I am conscious, and I hope all those who were involved take it as feedback and don't become overly defensive about it and say this is only 0.00% of all the births in Ireland. For the likes of all the women we've spoken to, this was 100% their experience. Mary Verbruggen and Johan, her son, Verbruggen, thank you both.